What if they double back? She looked up at me with bright eyes. Then shoot the one with the camera. 6. We went 18 map miles down that little road, peanut farms alternating with acres of weeds and spindly trash trees. The motel that was supposed to be at the 18-mile mark was a weedy-burned ruin with the words, "Friendly Folks," fading under broken neon tubes. British orthography or Americans trying to be classy? But it was only another 4 or 5 miles to a Comfort Inn. Traveling by car, you can afford to have contempt for chain motels. But when every mile is 48 calories, they look pretty good. There hadn't been much traffic, not even one car a minute. No black SUVs with bullet holes. The next motel was still standing, but ramshackle. "Try this one?" "Any place with a bed," she said. Her color wasn't good. Cheeks pale and forehead flushed, and she was breathing a little too hard. "Let's get these bikes out of sight." The black woman behind the desk was huge and suspicious-looking.
"Where's y'all's car?"
"We're on bikes," Kit said, convincingly clad in bright lycra and sweat.
"Sure you are."
When I said we'd pay in cash, she nodded with grim satisfaction and handed me a corroded brass key on a plastic tag that might once have borne a number.
"You go to room 14.
The room had a single low-watt bulb in the ceiling and a TV set that hissed and had no picture. Lots of roach tabs in the bathroom and closet, but no actual bugs. It smelled stale, but there are worse smells. The drapes were stuck in blackout position. We got a slight breeze going through with the front door and bathroom window open. The other windows were glued shut plastic. The fat lady directed me up to Bradley Road, where there was a mom-and-pop store and a porch where some old characters sat to drink beer and stare at alien invaders on bicycles. I got us a 4-pack of tall, cold, no-name beers and some cheese crackers and a strip of what claimed to be alligator jerky. Whatever the jerky was made of, it had a soporific effect. Or maybe it was the beer. Or maybe Jane Austen. The Five and Dine notebook had a few freebie book files, and I read about 3 pages of Pride and Prejudice. Kit was snoring by then, and I joined her. I woke up about 3, restless, mind racing. The hot water from the tap made something like coffee. Back to Hunter's World. Chapter 12. He had thought they were closing in on him. Twice yesterday morning he had seen unmarked police cars cruise by with men listening through headphones. A good thing his captive was gagged. But nothing for more than 24 hours now. If they had brought in dogs, it would not take very long with all the buried bones around. Dogs would like that. But they didn't have them, he supposed. Not a rich county. If it did come to that, he could move into another level of discourse. He could try to negotiate with them, essentially with a knife to her throat, inviting a simple headshot from a police sniper. Or he could cut her up and scatter pieces of her through the woods, hoping to distract them from his avenue of escape by repugnant overkill. Of course, that might make it harder on him if they caught him. Or maybe not. If you're brutal enough, they call you insane and treat you as if you were handicapped. Though it is they who are handicapped, by timidity. He approached the trailer in a large circle, checking 7 suspended threads that crossed every route to the place. He retrieved his shotgun from the bushes and entered the trailer silently without turning on the light. He listened in the darkness to her irregular breathing, drank in her smell. Then he pulled down the bandana that gagged her. "Can we talk?" she said to the darkness. He eased the safety off, and the small click was loud. "If you're trying to scare me, you've succeeded." The tone of her voice had told him that. He aimed the shotgun at her voice and touched the light switch. "So, that's what you look like." He had grabbed her from her tent in the darkness and tied her up in the trailer without light. "You're even bigger than I thought." "Uglier," he growled, the first word he had spoken in weeks. "Are you the one they're looking for?" He shrugged and stepped closer to her. Her breath was mint sweet. His made her flinch away. "I'm sorry," he said. "I didn't cook the last thing I ate. It had been on the road for a while." She coughed. "I'll do whatever you want, really." She took a breath and straightened up her well-toned body. "Anything."
"You wouldn't say that if you could see into my mind. Do you think there is nothing worse than death?"
She shook her head slowly. He wiped his lips with the back of his hand.
"What do you think you know about me? If I am the beast that has been on the news?"
He smiled, showing too many teeth.
"I am a beast, as they say. Not human."
"So they say." Her breath caught. "Of course, we are all animals."
"Not in the sense that I am one. I really am not human. I don't even come from Earth."
After a pause, she said, "So what planet are you from?" As if that were an ordinary question.
"I don't know. It was a long time ago. I have memory issues."
He studied his long, blunt nails as if the answer might be there.
"Thousands of years of memory issues."
His eyes came up.
"You think I'm crazy?"
Her voice shook a little. "On the news, they say you are." She tried to stare back at him, but looked away.
"Now you're going to tell me that someone is looking for you. If I let you go, they will be easy on me."
"That could be true," she said quietly, looking at the floor.
"Not quite lying. I like that."
He went to a window and peeked through the blinds.
"Would you like to offer your body to me?"
"It's yours, of course, but you don't seem to want it."
"What if I wanted you from behind? Rough?"
"That would be all right. I've..."
"From the front?"
He took a clasp knife from a deep pocket and shook it open with a snap. The blade was a dagger about 8 inches long.
"I mean the abdomen, as usual. Have you read about that?"
She shook her head in jerks, staring at the blade.
"Most newspapers haven't printed that. The fact is, not being a man, I have no particular interest in vaginas."
He sat down on a bar stool.
"They look like a wound to me, even when they're not bleeding. I prefer to make my own wounds."
She started to say something, but just swallowed.
"I enjoy it that you're scared, as you may know. You will live a little longer for that."
"But not very long."
"No."
He tested the blade with his thumb.
"Would you like for me to be kind and end it quickly?"
"I want to live." He smiled condescendingly.
"I have a news flash for you. The universe doesn't care. Neither do I. But even if you were to survive this little meeting, you would die very soon. A half century? That's nothing to me."
How old are you?"
"I remember Pompeii, and a flood before that. I may be immortal."
"Or insane," she whispered. He nodded.
Or insane. Maybe both.
He picked up a sharpening stone and drew the blade over it slowly.
Maybe I was sane a couple of thousand years ago. And it wore off.
7. There was a light on in the motel office, so I went in and printed out the chapter while a black kid about high school age watched me. Making conversation, I explained what a pain it was to try to do work on this dime store computer, not being able to just push a button and send it to my agent. He understood and volunteered that they had a scanner if I'd like to make an electronic copy and send it. It felt kind of funny, switching between the 20th and 21st centuries. I sent copies to myself and my agent, as well as DuQuest. Perversely, writing the nightmarish chapter helped me get to sleep. And when dawn showed through the drapes, Kit kissed me awake and slowly had her way with me. A quiet and dreamy kind of sex. There was a message slipped under the door. Evidently printed on the office computer. Ronald DuQuest, Hollywood. If you got this, you know my number. This is fucking fantastic. Keep the girl alive, stretch it out like the old Silence of the Lambs. Maybe a POV shift with some cops who can't figure out the craziness. You got a fucking movie here, man. It might be real money. I'll talk to some people. R.D. We took showers, laughing and chatting over the noise. Celebrate our good fortune and go back up to Bradley Road for breakfast. But when I braced the door open and started maneuvering the bikes out, a kid, younger than the one who'd helped me, opened the office door and jogged over.
Mister, guy said not to wake you up, but give this to you before you leave.
He handed me a heavy padded mailing envelope with no address. On the back of it, a crayon scrawl in green block letters. Someone thought you should have more fun. We went back inside and sat on the bed. I tore open the envelope, causing a blizzard of gray shreds. There was a thick hardcover book inside. Dexter Filkins' old history of the Gulf War, but most of the text was missing. Someone had hollowed out a large enough volume for two thick packages of $100 bills, banded $25,000 each, and one big bullet, heat-sealed into a plastic bag. And the key to room 15 next door, and a car key. We stepped around the bikes and opened the door to 15. On the bed, no surprise, a long rectangular box. He was in here, the boy said from behind us. The one who give me the envelope. Must have left before the sun come up. Left his car, too. What kind of man was he?
Old guy.
Old like me?
No, way old. Old white guy with a white stash.
I picked up one end of the box and let it fall, heavy. What exactly did he say?
He say give you the thing.
Nothing else?
Uh-uh. He don't say nothing.
Come on. What did he say?
Nothing.
The kid bolted. I got to the door just in time to see him run behind the motel.